The following is a graph of suicides of both males and females between the ages of 15 and 24 from 1900 to 2006. Now, the data for this graph was compiled by Tom Mortensen from the Pell Institute for the Study of Opportunity in Higher Education, and I originally came across it via MRA Red 0660's blog, which is in the link box, but also through a PDF that Tom Mortensen has posted on the internet titled What's Wrong with the Boys, which is also in the description box. Now, in this PDF, he gives various findings in regards to men and boys faltering in the school systems and in the job markets, as well as the suicide data given here. And his email and phone number is given for those that wish to talk personally with him as a source. That said, if we are to believe the accuracy of this graph, and I do, then we have to take notice, of course, of the dramatic spike in suicide rates of males around the 1965 mark. Before we do that, though, let's ask ourselves, what is suicide? To me, it's a human being suffering tremendously, making one final statement to the world before leaving it forever, at least in the physical sense. And since none of us knows exactly what lies beyond that, we have to assume that people that commit suicide do so with the full knowledge that the act itself will possibly relinquish them of their consciousness forever. Now, that realization alone is pretty profound if you ask me, and as someone with an intense interest in trying to speculate what runs through the minds of people during times of extreme duress, I came to the stark conclusion that the moments leading up to a person's suicide and the loneliness they have to feel is, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most terrifying things I've ever tried to conceptualize. And I was keeping that thought in mind when it became obvious that the near exponential spike in the number of male suicide at about 1965 is a clear reaction to feminism and the disenfranchisement of men that followed afterwards. Now, what I want to highlight is the very real damage done by giving men the false impression that things will be different for them. That although marriages were just starting to fall apart and women were beginning to steal what men worked for illegally with permission from the state, that if he managed to do everything right, if he worked hard enough, if he was enough of a gentleman, then he would be rewarded with that one girl that was different and special and loyal and whatever other fairy tale fantasy character trait men seem determined to see in women. Understand, when looking at this graph, that those blue dots represent tens of thousands of male lies that were told ridiculous, ineffective, and outright damaging lies about how it was up to them to just meet the right woman, about how marriage is, quote, a lot of hard work, but it's so worth it, and various other phrases of nondescript and ineffective nonsense that didn't actually help them understand the dynamics between men and women when the feminist changes that the 60s ushered in were in its infancy. This was the kind of euphemistic crap that was given to men while women were gaining legal power over men that allowed them to legally steal their children and wealth in the court systems. How many of those blue dots represent the life of a man that was enslaved by a woman he thought loved him in the court system? How many men were raised to pursue this sacred partnership between men and women that dissolved into nothing more than a collective backstabbing on the part of women the very moment they were convinced that they didn't need men anymore? We can no longer afford to tell men this. You know, at this point, the well-being of our young men and boys is at stake here, because as evidenced by this graph, we see that men and boys will believe these lies, and when women prove themselves to be hypergamous and self-interested, men will not be able to handle it, and many will die at their own hands. This isn't about hating women. It's about being honest to men. Women are not your partners. They never have been. They are the other half of your species. That's all. They are biologically equipped, both physically and mentally, to extract resources from men. And men have a very real handicap in the form of various chemical processes in the brain that make it easier for women to do this. And if we're not careful, men will believe a very dangerous and very inaccurate mythos about the opposite sex that will destroy them when the sobering realities of divorce courts spell it out for them in the most emotionally and financially draining way possible, that Brifelt's law is real, and that the system will help to facilitate these usurious facets of the female nature. Telling men that women are their natural partners instead of their natural vehicles for procreation, with their own separate interests and demands pertaining to said procreation, is tantamount to telling a person with a known genetic predisposition for alcoholism that the warm, fuzzy feelings he experiences while drinking are genuine feelings of happiness and relaxation, instead of a biochemical, alcohol-induced farce that will eventually destroy his liver and kill him if he becomes dependent on it. We need to be honest with men, and we need to let them know that these extremely powerful romantic feelings they experience while under the haze of courtship is nothing more than a mechanism for getting men to take on the liability of a woman. and at great personal risk to himself, both in prehistoric times when he was expected to furnish her with extra protection and sustenance, and in modern day civilization where the state willingly extends the lengths to which the female entitlement mentality naturally found in women can be deployed against men. We cannot tell men that women were there every step of the way, while men beat back the jungle and put civilization in its place because they loved men so much. I mean, it's preposterous. They were there because they needed to be. They were there because without the efforts of men, women would still be eking out some godforsaken nomadic existence full of danger and despair and misery, completely devoid of longevity and hope. And that spike in suicide rates correlate conveniently with the first time in human history where invention and mechanization and modern medicine allowed women to live long enough and with sufficient leisure time to pursue jobs devoid of physical labor that could only have been possible because of male ingenuity. Now, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but women bided their time and at the opportune moment made a decision to start competing with men. I mean, I'm sorry to break it to you, but that's what happened. Now, I don't need to be lectured on the negative effects of illegal immigration, for example. I understand that any economy has a fixed amount of jobs. I understand that unchecked illegal immigration creates unhealthy competition and lessens the job prospects of the actual citizens of the country in question. But I do find it funny just how quick men get up in arms when some Mexican migrant worker takes some backbreaking grape-picking job out of the American job market. Then stop the presses, because Mexicans, specifically male migrant workers, are now a separate and competing social and economic class that poses a direct threat to the mostly male American workers. Correcting, of course, for the countless HR paper-pushing jobs that women are given. And you know, there would be some truth to that. I mean, you certainly wouldn't hear any friendly rhetoric about how these are our brothers and we need to work together for the sake of some feel-good made-up bullshit. They would be treated as a population in direct competition with the American worker. There would be no talk of working together so that the state can't divide us. You know, they would be competed against fiercely. And individual friendships between Mexicans and Americans would surely exist, but only within a larger context of economic competition. When women, however, are given college grants and job preferences and sexual harassment accommodations and maternity leave, when men are systematically pushed out of entire work industries, the best men can do is grumble about changing the laws so that women can go back to being our natural partners. I mean, completely ignoring the fact that women gladly took all of those jobs they knew damn well they didn't earn, knowing that a man would be deprived of that job who would have gotten it without affirmative action. How about we start telling men about how women really view them first and foremost before we focus on changing any laws? I mean, how many less suicides would you see on this graph if men knew the true nature of women and subsequently decided to start competing with them right back instead of this please be our partners again while you give us an economic vivisection because you complete us bullshit? How many less male suicides if we had an educated male population even with the misandric wealth transfer laws in place? I mean, you can pass the most archaic alimony laws, far exceeding what we have today, and if men aren't looking for those sweet little Cinderella soulmates, they won't be wrapping belts around their necks when it turns out that she was just a generic, hypergamous, highly scrutinized and categorized example of biological female self-interest. Now, I'm not telling men to not date women, I'm not telling them to not get laid. By all means, if you wish to enjoy the dance of courtship, I'm certainly not mad at you for it. But consider it the same way you would an act of social drinking or the occasional bong hit amongst friends. Yes, it feels good. Yes, it's enjoyable. But it's a temporary high. Don't become an alcoholic. Don't become a pothead. When you wake up the next day, learn to separate it from reality. That's all I really gotta say for now.